You're listening to What She Said, a podcast for bloggers and creatives hosted by me, Lucy Sharif, a freelance journalist living in London. Each week, I interview different women in blogging and the online world, getting their best blogging tips and advice, and a little bit of gossip too. Thanks for listening. So I've realised basically that I have a terrible potty mouth. So I'm actually going to stop swearing or try to as much so that I can have an episode that's rated clean, which would be nice. Anyway, this week my wonderful guest is Elle Croft of ellcroft.com. She's a blogger, social media expert and a published writer. She wrote a novel, which is absolutely crazy, and it comes out really, really soon. And she's also one of my favourite writers, one of my favourite human beings in general, actually. She's awesome. So we chatted about why it's important to look beyond the numbers, the power of Facebook, and Elle shares some incredible tips on how to utilise Facebook to promote your blog to a much wider audience. We ponder the disappearance of Google+, where on earth did that go, admit our social media fails, and talk about how blogging helped Elle get published.
Welcome, Elle.
Thanks for having me.
Published author.
Well, not yet.
Soon to be published.
Soon to be published. So, actually, I've jumped in, but do you want to, if anybody doesn't know who you are, do you want to jump in and tell us who you are and explain your blogging journey?
Sure. So, I'm Elle Croft. I'm a travel blogger. I have my own blog at ellcroft.com, and I also am one of the Travel Hack team members. So I work with Monica, who was one of your guests a few weeks ago.
Friend of the podcast.
Yeah. And I've been blogging for probably about 7 years. I started in 2010. I had no creative outlet and I was in a soul-destroying job. It was called document control, which is essentially a fancy word for filing. Oh. So I filed all day.
That's jazzy.
Oh, it was so jazzy. And I was living in Canada at the time, which sounds really exciting, but I didn't know a lot of people, so I didn't have a huge social life, which sounds really sad now when I say it, but I really just needed something to do. And my husband worked weekends as well, so weekends I was like, I just need to do something. So I started blogging, and it started out as a fashion blog, which is hilarious now, and I've deleted all those posts because they're embarrassing. But the only bloggers I had ever seen or heard of were like personal style bloggers, so I didn't know that travel blogging was a thing. So I kind of just copied what I knew and started out with personal style blogging, and then quickly realised that travel was what I wanted to talk about, and moved to London, started doing a lot more travel, so I had stuff to write about. I've been blogging for ages. I'm not full-time as a blogger. I do it sort of part-time, and then I do freelance social media consulting and copywriting. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, I have a book being published it comes out as an ebook in December and then paperback in January, and it's a psychological thriller.
So exciting. It's called The Guilty Wife. I haven't obviously read it yet, but it's on my Amazon wish list for pre-order.
Cool.
Do you want to tell us how that all happened?
Yeah, so I've always wanted to write a book in the way that everyone always says they want to write a book.
Yeah.
And I always hated every job I had, I hated. Like, even the ones that I thought I was going to really like, when I thought, oh yeah, I really want to do social media as a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And then I actually got a job in social media, and then I was like, no, I still hate it. And it was just this real kind of, I don't know, a frustration that I'd had for years and years and years, where people would say, what do you want to do then if you hate all your jobs? And I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, if I could have my way, I'd just write books and, you know, do that. But it just seemed like this completely unrealistic sort of pipe dream. So I never thought it was possible, really. And then in 2012 or 2013, I can't actually remember, sometime around then, I heard of National Novel Writing Month, which is where it's called NaNoWriMo. So you basically, people around the world challenge themselves to write 50,000 words in a month, which is huge. Yeah. And it means you have to write, I think it's like 1,700 words a day.
That's a lot.
It is if you're like working full time and trying to blog and stuff. So I decided just to set myself a challenge and do that. And I was working full time, so I'd get up at 6 o'clock and do my hour and a half of writing or whatever, and then quickly scurry to work and then do my blogging at night.
So where were you? What were you doing then? Social media?
Yeah, that was my social media job. And I didn't really have a storyline. I had some characters. No real storyline. I was really writing just for the sake of writing and getting in the habit. But it taught me some really good habits, and it actually kind of formed the basis of an idea. I then deleted all 50,000 words because it was terrible. But it kind of made me think, okay, I can do this. Like, if I could write 50,000 words in a month, I can write 100,000 words and make them actually sound good. So, so then I just started working on it. I had major breaks in between, so I'd take 6 months off and just be like, I can't think about it right now. So then in, when was it, 2016? Yeah, so last year, I started pitching for agents, and that was a really fun process because you get a lot of rejections.
Yeah.
And because I've never worked in publishing, I don't know people who have books published or whatever, it was really just like Googling agent in London who does crime fiction.
So is that literally what so at this point, you, just to backtrack a bit, you'd written The Guilty Wife.
Yes, which wasn't called The Guilty Wife back then, but yeah, I'd written what I thought the final version, which is hilarious now because it's changed so much since then. But yeah, I'd written it to a point where I was like, this is as good as I think I can get it.
Yeah.
And then I'd read a little bit from published authors online who kind of talked about the process and what you need to do to get published. And, you know, you have to write a query letter for agents and you have to get that right. That's a massive part of it. And then you have to pitch agents and then they get the publisher. And it's this whole process that I had no idea about. I sort of thought you wrote your book, sent it to a publisher, and they went, yep, and then published it. And
that's kind of what I thought.
Yeah, it's nothing like that. There's so many steps. Like, I'm learning so much about the whole industry and the process, and it is a really long process with a lot of steps and a lot of collaboration from the point where you get the agent. Then it's like, it was my book up until that point, and then it's like you have to just go with it and take their advice and notes and edits and... Yeah, so it's been a very interesting journey. It still feels really surreal, actually, because, when I looked at, there's a blog post, and I'll send you the link so you can put it in the show notes, but it was by an author called Delilah Dawson, and I actually haven't read any of her work. She does, like, young adult fantasy novels, which is not kind of my jam, but she wrote this amazing blog post that was, like, 26 steps to being a traditionally published author. And that has been, like, my guide, basically. Yeah. So I was at step one and thinking I will never get to step 26. It just seemed like such a mammoth journey. So it's really weird that now I'm currently at step 24 or 25 or something. Crazy. And it's like, how did I get here?
It's been a bit of a whirlwind. It's so exciting. So exciting. So you wrote a blog post, was it last week, where you were talking about how having a blog helped you get published. I really like actually the first line where you're like, this is a misleading title, but it's a good title.
It was a clickbait title. Shameless. I think the thing was, it's been so long that I've kind of forgotten my motivations for starting a blog, but I feel like at the back of my head there was a bit of a, well, I'll start blogging and then I've got a bit of a writing portfolio, so when I want to write a novel then I'll have something to show someone and be like, look, I can write. Which in the end was not how it happened at all, and no one really cared about my blog because it's got nothing to do with writing fiction. But despite that, blogging has taught me so much just about like discipline in writing, and confidence was a major one as well. So like blogging has taught me loads. It's just not the path that I thought it would take me on. So I kind of assumed that by having a blog, some agent would just approach me one day and be like, oh, I see you have this great blog, why don't you write a book?
Because sometimes people say that's how it happens. I've seen a lot of the mummy bloggers say, oh, like they approached me after they saw, and I find that really hard to believe, especially...
I think for non-fiction it works like that a little bit more.
Yeah, I guess
it, because if you're an expert on a topic, then they know that you can write it. And so I think that does, but for fiction, not really, unless you're Zoella, and then they know that they can sell whatever. And then you get a ghostwriter to do it anyway.
Exactly.
I kind of assumed that it would lead me down that path, but actually it just taught me so much about how to squeeze things into my already busy days and how to handle rejection and how to handle collaboration and things like that. So it has actually been totally essential to, like, I don't think I would have written this book if I hadn't been blogging.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I would have the confidence and things like that.
So. And the discipline and motivation and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
You touched on something in that blog post about editing, which
I found really interesting because Abby King, who writes the blog in the Travel Lab, Inside Travel Lab, not in the Travel Lab, Inside Travel Lab, she is an amazing writer and she does a lot of talks on writing. And she always says, edit everything, edit like a crazy amount, like 80%, but everything, including social media, and you were saying like having a blog. In fact, actually, it was kind of the other way around a bit as well, wasn't it? So writing a book almost made you more critical of your blog writing in terms of editing.
Definitely. I think it's kind of, it's worked both ways a little bit. So when I first started blogging, I would just sort of throw a blog post up.
Mm.
And then when I would go back and read that a year later, I would just cringe and think like, oh, like I either have to completely edit this or delete it. Along the way of blogging, I learned how to sort of edit myself a little bit more and not assume that I'm the world's greatest writer. Like when I started, I was like, yeah, I can write.
Yeah.
Of course I can write. I did English at high school and sort of assumed that I knew everything there was to know about writing, which, again, is totally hilarious and so wrong because I still know nothing when it comes to, you know, like I'd get these edits back for my book and just think, oh, how did I not know that? Like just formatting dialogue and things like that. I had no idea how to do it and I was doing it wrong the whole time. And the poor editor had to go through and fix all of that. It's worked both ways, I guess. Seeing the edits that came back from my editor and the copy editor and the line editor, and that just showed me a lot about my own writing, and seeing when I was overusing commas or underusing commas and things like that. So,
I mean, that terrifies me because, I've been following your blog for a long time before we met, and I love your writing. I think you and Bren are probably my favourite writers. And you're definitely like the bar I set myself. Aww. So if you don't think you're good, then shit. I've got
problems. Well, I guess it's more I know that I can improve.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
So going back to blogging, so you've been doing it a long time and have gone through a bit of a journey from fashion blogger to travel blogger, but actually, so your blog now, would you categorise it as a straight up travel blog? Or
I say lifestyle, but then I think lifestyle is just like, and no offence to lifestyle bloggers because it is a genuine thing, but for me I kind of just use it as a catch-all because I don't really know how to categorise my blog. Because it is, I'm trying to, like I do travel and I love writing about travel, but I also really like writing about more personal stuff, and that's been something I've been experimenting with probably over the past year or so, and just trying to write more honestly about kind of what's going on in my life and things like that, and I really enjoy that. And I do like the fashion stuff as well. I would like to write a little bit more about that. So, yeah, it's kind of just my personal space to write about things. And now I'm writing a bit more about writing as well, because obviously that's something that is a huge part of my life, and also it's something people are really curious about. So,
yeah.
Might as well.
It's getting meta.
Writing about writing.
What have been the biggest kind of growth game changers for you over the way? So even though you don't, it's not your full-time
gig,
you are a successful blogger in the blogosphere.
Thanks, I mean, I don't kind of, again, I think it's like with writing, I just see so much room for improvement, so I'm always probably my worst critic. I'm like, oh, it's terrible, I need to do so much on it. But game changers, I think learning how to get involved with the travel blogging community made a huge difference. Like, I'm a major introvert. So, like, going to networking events is just the most terrifying thing for me. And so for the first few years of travel blogging, I would go and kind of cling to the one or two people that I knew and just be too afraid to meet anyone else.
Yeah.
Or I'd walk into the room and just be like, I can't do this, and I'd walk out again and just go home. So I sort of shied away from that for a while. And then as soon as I started getting to know more people and feeling like I had a community in the network, that made a huge difference, because it's just, I don't know, blogging, so much of the joy of blogging is about supporting each other and having that network and friendship. It kind of sounds cheesy, but I think as soon as you have other supporters within the same kind of field, you're sharing each other's stuff, and it's really organic. It's not like a like-for-like, share-for-share kind of thing. It is just like you get to know people and you want to share the content that they're sharing because it's great. So that really helped, just knowing people and being part of that community. I think that was the biggest thing. And then also working with the Travel Hack has been massive. And not necessarily for my own blog. So my blog growth has kind of just, like, been the same for years. It's not really growing at this, like, rapid major rate, which I'm actually fine with because it's still a bit of a sort of side gig, I guess. But working with the Travel Hack and being part of the Travel Hack team has been amazing just for the travel opportunities. And, I've done some incredible trips.
You guys go on some amazing trips.
Yeah. So that's been cool. It's kind of fed my wanderlust. And given me a bigger platform to write on. And then I can use my own blog just as kind of my personal space, I guess.
Which is quite nice because then you don't ever have to pin down a category or whatever because... Yeah, I feel I'm kind of the same way, but although I'm starting to think I'd quite like to actually make my blog grow a little bit.
Yeah.
I've been so lazy with it for so long. And we were talking offline, as it were, in the kitchen while making tea, about Facebook and Pinterest and things like that. And you are a bit of a Facebook expert. And I wondered if you could share some of your top tips. Because anyone who's listening doesn't know, Facebook have changed their link preview now.
Yeah. So now you used to post a link and then Facebook would give you the option to edit the meta title and description, which isn't a huge deal as such, because obviously you don't want to completely change it because it should reflect what the article is about anyway. But it is a nice little tool to have because you can make it a little bit more Facebook friendly as opposed to Google SEO friendly, which is what it currently is. So if you're not sure what I'm talking about, the meta description and title is what you put in if you have the Yoast SEO plugin, which I think a lot of bloggers do. That's where you put in the title and meta description, and that's what Facebook pulls through to the preview. So now you just can't edit that, which is...
It's a pain.
Yeah, I find it a bit annoying because I like to shorten the title because I don't like the title going over two lines. I just find it really, like, visually unappealing.
Like in a widow orphan way or in a...
No, in, like, if the title's too long, it takes up two lines. And I don't, just am a bit of a perfectionist. So I guess now I'm just going to have to go and edit my meta titles and make them a little bit more...
Snappy.
Like, make them work for both Google and Facebook. It's not really a huge deal. And because now everyone's going to be doing the same thing, I think links are just going to start looking a little bit messier on Facebook across the board.
Yeah.
And that's a shame, but they're doing it to stop fake news, basically.
Ah, is that the reason?
Yeah, because they don't want to... They don't want people to put a link up about one thing and say it's about something else just to get clicks. Yeah, that is because Facebook's come under fire so much since the election.
So we shouldn't talk shit about Facebook, basically. They're doing this for a good reason.
They're doing it for a good reason, but it's annoying that the people who are doing the right thing are now being punished for it. It's like, well, I don't do clickbait apart from the blog post we just talked about, how blogging helped me get a book deal.
It wasn't fake news.
It wasn't fake news. So that's slightly annoying. But I think with Facebook, so my expertise in Facebook is advertising. Yeah. So I kind of go to brands and businesses and help them to advertise better. And a lot of brands use agencies who don't necessarily know how to best use Facebook. So I had a client just this week, actually, and the lady started a business last year or so, and she's been ploughing so much money into Facebook ads and seeing absolutely nothing for that because she's been doing it through an agency that said, yeah, we're digital specialists. And I did 2 hours of training with her, and she was like, oh, this is a game changer. Like, this is – because if you're using Facebook ads properly, they're so powerful. Mm-hmm. But if you're just kind of clicking the boost button and putting £100 behind it, you're probably not going to see a lot of return. So for bloggers, it's not – as relevant, because I don't think there's very many bloggers who are putting much money behind Facebook ads.
But should they be?
Well,
or could they be?
I think if you're going to put money behind any social platform on advertising, it should be Facebook, because the kind of targeting that you can do is so much more powerful than Pinterest or Instagram or Twitter. So you're going to get more of the right people to your blog as opposed to more people. Like, I'm a huge advocate of quality over quantity when it comes to advertising traffic, because you could just chuck some money at any platform and see you know, a few thousand visitors, but if they're never going to come back or they're never going to take any action, what's the point?
Which is kind of what we were saying about Pinterest, which we'll definitely get to. But so, but going back to Facebook ads, if say if I decide to boost a post, what would be the number one mistake that I probably make?
Audience.
That you see, yeah.
Targeting.
So not going, not cutting it.
Well, so I think most people just go with interests or boosting to friends or whatever, but there's so much more that you can do with Facebook. So you can put a little bit of code into your website, it's called a pixel, and it'll track all of your traffic, and you can then create audiences based on that. So you could say, okay, I want to build an audience of anyone who's visited my website in the past 30 days, who's visited for, like, the longest time. Like, you can only do it by percentage, so you can't say time frames, but you could say, okay, I want to target those people who have been on my site for a long time in the past 30 days. Uh-huh. And then you can target to them. And Facebook, they don't have to have ever interacted with you on Facebook, but Facebook kind of sees who's going to your site and then finds them on Facebook, creates an audience. Exactly. So you can target, like, they already know who you are because they've visited your site.
Yeah.
So it's not like cold targeting. People are already familiar, so they're more likely to go, oh yeah, I remember that blog,
yeah,
and then go back to it. And there's so, I mean, that's just like the tip of the iceberg. There's so much you can do with it, and it's so clever. So if you're ever going to be doing advertising on Facebook, make sure you're using the right audience. That's like the number one thing to get successful.
That's a brilliant, brilliant tip. I'm definitely going to be using that.
Excellent. And I do have some... I have another website that I've kind of neglected for the past year while I've been doing. Yeah, I've got, it's called croftsocial.com, and I think I've got some advanced Facebook advertising tips on there. Okay. I should go and write a post. Yeah. Yeah, I've kind of neglected that while I've
and
been doing
Twitter
the book stuff.
As well. You've got a separate Twitter.
Yeah, again, that's also equally neglected. Okay. So. Probably shouldn't have mentioned those because they look terrible.
It's all right. By the time this goes out, you've got about a month.
Okay, great.
So
cool. I also have to write a second book in the next few months, so I'm like neglecting all things to write my book. But
that's so exciting. Is it gonna be a sequel?
No, not a sequel. Different. Totally different. Same genre. Totally different storyline. Thank God, because I'm so done with all of those characters and that whole storyline. I never want to see them again.
Yeah, I bet. By the time you get to the end of it, you're probably like, I am literally never reading this book. It's terrible.
Yeah.
I can't bear it.
Yeah.
I hate everyone in it.
Yeah. And I had to go through recently and do, like, last-minute copy edits. So basically they found the book. I've got – there's proofs going out to blogger, like book bloggers today, actually, at the festival I'm going to. So I've seen it as, like, a properly bound copy, but there's still, like, a few mistakes in there. So I had to go through and, like, try and find them. But I know what – I meant to write, and so my brain just reads what should be on the page, and so it's really difficult to pick up mistakes, but I've been having to, like, comb through and try and read word for word, and it's just the worst. And then I'll pick up a sentence and be like, what was I thinking? Why did I write that? But it's too late to make changes like that. It's basically just, like, spelling mistakes.
I hate this plot.
Yeah. I hate everyone. No, I love it. It's great. Go buy it.
No, it looks really good. I'm excited to read it. So... going back to what I sort of touched on with the wrong type of traffic.
Yes.
This might be a bit controversial because actually I'm a massive advocate of using Pinterest to drive traffic to your blog. But you mentioned something which is so bloody true. So Pinterest, I mean, it does the same for your blog as it does for my blog. It drives a lot of traffic, but to a very small amount of blog posts.
Yeah.
And for me, it's... three very specific types of travel posts, 2-week itinerary posts, and 2 packing posts, which is fine. I love writing those posts, but I actually don't write them as much as I write quite a lot of other stuff. I write a lot more about motherhood, I write a lot more about blogging, and just about kind of deep and meaningful, overshare-y stuff,
I love.
I love writing it. It's my favourite, and I get the best engagement from that, but I don't get the best traffic from that, because... even though I guess it's kind of shareable, I don't get as much as I get from Pinterest on other posts because there isn't a nice little group board on Pinterest for random overshare-y
type posts. And it's not the sort of thing, it might be something that you want to read, but it's not the sort of thing that you want to save on a board for later.
Exactly.
When I'm planning that trip and I need to know how to do that, I'll come back to this post kind of thing. So, Yeah, and I think Pinterest is fantastic for driving traffic, and I'm really pleased that, you know, I've got like probably 3 or 4 posts that consistently bring loads of traffic to my site each month. But then it's not that that's not what I write anymore, because I do still do a lot of travel, and most of them are travel posts, but I don't think it's high quality traffic. I think it's people who click on, they either just like save the pin, or they click on it, get what they need, and leave. And I feel like I need to do better at making like a bit of a kind of onward journey for people who have just arrived on those posts, and maybe making custom like welcome mats or whatever you call them. So that when people arrive, I can say, okay, you like this kind of post, why don't you check out these ones as well? Or really sign up to my email newsletter and you'll get a free guide to whatever. Yeah.
Is there anything specific you do with your email list?
I'm not very good with my email list. It's something that I'm fairly new to. I do have a,
I subscribed.
Thanks. I'm trying to do a monthly newsletter now. Like, I kind of have been really sporadic about it, but I'm trying to be a bit more disciplined and do it once a month. And, I don't feel like it's something I've really nailed, and it's something that I came quite late to. So I wish I'd been getting email subscribers from the very start. So if you're starting blogging, like, make that a priority. Get your email list sorted. Because the thing is, like, as much as I'm a social media expert, I would never, ever advise putting all of your time and effort into social media, because you don't own those platforms. Facebook changes at whiplash speed. Like, you can't keep up with the things that they're suddenly banning or changing, and the algorithm is like beyond anyone's comprehension. So you don't own those platforms, but you own your email list. So you can, you know, that's never going away no matter what any of the social platforms do.
Yeah.
I think, and we've seen like Google Plus has just sort of like fizzled, and
imagine
if you put all of your time and effort into growing your Google Plus page and now it's worthless.
I feel it's the one thing that every time I see someone's Google Plus to one of my posts, and I'm like, oh God, yeah, I've got that. And I feel a bit smug because I'm like, oh, I never thought that would work. But it's probably because I just couldn't be bothered.
Yeah. But they were promising that it was going to be the next big thing, and it just wasn't. So, yeah.
It was so complicated. I remember, like, you would have your personal Google Plus, and then you could have, like, your business page.
Yeah.
And it was so complicated.
It was really hard to set up, wasn't it? It was always just, like, really fiddly and not very straightforward. Yeah, not intuitive.
Which is interesting from Google, because
basically... Yeah, they're usually so good.
I know. Fucked up there.
Yeah. Awkward. Stick to what you know. But yeah, so I would definitely, if I could go back, I would do my email list as a priority from the start.
I agree. But anyway, I didn't. Do you use MailChimp?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like MailChimp. I don't think I know its full capacities though. Like, I need to actually sit down one day and just teach myself everything that MailChimp can do.
I do really basic stuff on it, but because once you have to start paying for your subscribers, you unlock a lot of other features.
Okay, I'm not there yet.
I mean, I flitter on that one because I'm at the very, very low end.
Yeah.
But it was a real ego thing. I kept, I don't know, like maybe 1,000 extra subscribers that literally never opened. They hadn't opened the past 5 things I sent. I was like, why am I keeping these people? Why am I paying for these people? And I realised it was a complete ego thing.
And that's the thing with the quality versus quantity. Yeah. Again, it's like, you'd rather have 10 subscribers who are actually going to like interact and engage and buy from you if you're selling something.
Yeah,
than 1,000 people who don't actually care.
That number is completely meaningless.
Yes. All numbers are meaningless because it's the number of people who care that actually matters.
Yeah. It's but like, how do you measure that?
Well,
how do you personally measure that? Because I think you're a really interesting blogger, because you actually, a lot of people say they don't care about numbers, but actually I feel like you really don't give a shit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care how many people are visiting my site. But also, it's not my job. Like, I think if I made money from it, and if that was my sole income, I would care a lot more, because that would make a huge difference. Whereas it is, like, I like to treat it as a hobby, even though I work at it like a job. I treat it like a hobby because I don't want to lose the joy, and I don't want to, because I've been through that. Like, I've been through the whole cycle of, like, obsessing over numbers, and that's just, it brings nothing to my life to do that. So I've just got to the point where I'm like, whatever, I don't care.
Yeah, so
if it makes one person's trip better, or if, like, a personal post helped one person think about something differently, great, I've like done something amazing.
Yeah.
So
you've done more than what you set out to do because you're writing it for the joy anyway.
Yeah. And I think because I set out to do it not really ever believing that anyone would read it, like it was genuinely just a creative outlet. Mm-hmm. I didn't think anyone other than like my mom and sister would read it, which they still do. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I feel like most bloggers always feel like no one's reading. Even even though you can see in Google Analytics, okay, this many people, 10 people have come to my site.
But it doesn't feel like real people, does it? It does feel like a number. And I think that's the danger with numbers, is that you stop looking at it as actual people and you start thinking of it as a figure and a number. And people are not numbers. Yeah. And the people who are coming to your site, they're coming for something. So are you providing a person with something, or are you just in it for the numbers?
Yeah.
And I think that kind of changes the way that you look at content and the way that you look at success as well.
Do you have any, in terms of content, do you have like a bit of a content calendar or a bit of a content plan? Because I see these people, so obviously you can't see this because this is audio, but Elle's shaking her head, which makes me really happy.
Shaking my head with shame.
Yeah, because I also don't. But I sometimes see people, especially on like Instagram stories or whatever, like, oh, just content planning for the month with like all these printables. What do you mean? I just write. Like,
I've tried it. I've tried every, honestly, I have every blogging trick and tip and process under the sun. I've tried it. A content plan makes me feel really smug and great at the beginning of the month, and then by the end of the month it makes me feel like the biggest failure because I have not stuck to it and I'm like, my life is crumbling before my eyes. So yeah, no, I can't do that. I just have to, I have a sort of to-do list. If I know there's posts that I have to write because it's a brand post, or it's a trip post and I kind of, you know, need to write it up before I forget everything I did, then I'll have it in like a to-do list.
Yeah.
And so I kind of know that I need to get it done shortly. But yeah, no, some days I just think, what do I want to write about today? And then I'll do it. Or I don't feel like writing that day.
So you don't have any kind of consistency in terms of the days that you post?
Absolutely not.
Interesting.
And I don't know whether that's good or bad, but to me
it is what it is.
I write when I can write and
You've been writing a book, and now you're writing another book. So have a really good
I'm trying to give myself a bit of a break because, As I say, and I do have to remind myself of this quite frequently, like, my blog is not my full-time job.
Yeah.
It's not my main source of income. It does make a little bit, but not enough to live on. And so I sometimes other things just need to take priority, and that's totally fine.
I think you follow Jen Carrington as well. I will link to all of her stuff in the show notes. She's amazing. I did coaching with her, actually, and she really encourages... you know, sometimes you just have to do the work that has to be done.
Yeah.
So it's really lovely to do dreamy creative stuff that just is fun, but you know, you have to pay the bills.
Yeah.
And she encouraged me to have like a day for everything. So I would have on Mondays would be my pitch day to editors, which normally would throughout the week, I would then be coming back into that, but Monday would be the day to craft it. And then anything I got commissions from, I would then obviously spend the whole week if I needed to, but Monday was set for that. And then Tuesday I was able to do just Wanderloo's blogging, just fun stuff.
Nice.
Because so then like Monday is the tough day, but Tuesday, and I you don't have to do it like that, you could do Monday, it's your dreamy day of creative stuff.
Well, I kind of tend to do half days. So I'll do, as in I don't work half days, but I split my days in half. So I will do book writing for the first half of the day. So I'll get up, just do that so that I know it's done and then I'm not panicking. And then after lunch, then I'll do blog stuff or client stuff or whatever other stuff needs to happen. So
that's a good idea.
Some days that kind of gets screwed up and I can't do the writing or I can't do any of it and something will take precedence. But yeah, I try and get both done because I feel a bit like, if I had particular days, if one thing screwed it up or if like someone put a meeting in for a Monday, I'd be like, oh no, now I don't know when I'm going to do this stuff I need to do. So that's what works for me. But I think it is good to have some kind of order, but without being too strict about it.
Being a social media expert, but also not really being obsessive about numbers and about your blog, do you have a specific kind of plan for your social media? Do you use a scheduler, or do you kind of not
No, I use a scheduler. So I feel like I have imposter syndrome a lot because I feel like I'm a social media expert, but my social platforms are like pitiful compared to like loads of other bloggers. I don't have, you know, this massive following. But I do want to at least kind of keep content going out and keep it fresh. Because I do get, as I was saying to you offline in the kitchen earlier, Pinterest drives the most traffic, but then Facebook is the second one to that. And then Twitter is a tiny bit.
Yeah.
So I do want to keep content going out on those platforms. So I use Edgar, which is a really cool tool.
I use Edgar as well.
Do you? Yeah. I love it because
it's been the best for me, actually.
Yeah, and it's expensive compared to any of the other tools, but it is almost like hiring a social media person.
Definitely,
because it just, you put content in and then it stays in there forever and you can kind of decide when content goes out and it'll just churn out all your old posts, which
it's
is
so
brilliant.
Easy as well.
So easy. It's really user-friendly.
You basically set a schedule for the week of when you want things to go out and you categorise it by as many things as you want.
Yeah.
So I have, like, the blog posts that I share, other people's blog posts that I share, and then my blog posts. Mine's pretty simple, but you could do things like, you could have, I don't know, like, blog tips or a specific type of, like, fashion posts go out at this time, and once you put that in, you really don't need to do a lot.
You don't need to do much at all. You have to go in and like add new content and just make sure. And the other thing you need to do is when there is a disaster somewhere in the world, you need to check that there's not something scheduled, because that has happened to me three times.
God,
every time,
the time
there's something. Like after the London attack lately, there was a post that went out like 20 minutes after the news broke. 20 reasons why I hate London. It's like a sarcastic post.
No.
And someone tweeted at me being like, inappropriate timing. I was like, can I just die now, please?
Oh, no.
The worst. And then it's happened to me,
bless
I think,
you,
three times.
I think people, so that's why, I remember when we were talking about, you asked me if, like, the wording of something, and I was like,
right.
Oh, you're being so paranoid.
Yeah.
No,
I am paranoid. Do you know what? I had, this is just a funny social media story from when I was working at Flight Centre, and I went on holidays for, like, 3 weeks, and so I pre-scheduled, like, 3 weeks' worth of content, and I knew what the marketing plan was, so I could, like, pre-schedule everything. And there was a Malaysia Airlines sale, and I was on the flight coming home, and it was the same day that the Malaysia Airlines flight went missing. And then I got back into the office, and it was the next day, and I had tweeted all day, like, scheduled posts, being like, check out these amazing Malaysia Airlines offers. I was just, it was the worst thing that could possibly happen as a social media specialist. I think it's a case-by-case thing, but I think as long as you're sensitive. And, but yeah, so I do use a scheduler. I have had some slightly embarrassing things
it happens,
but I've now learned. And when I, you know, if something breaks in the news and I think, oh, actually I have a post about that destination, I now, like, the first thing I do is go in and check that I don't have anything scheduled. So I have learned from it, but now I use Edgar, and then that's just for Facebook and Twitter. And then Instagram, I'm just sort of playing around with it, really. So sometimes I post every day, sometimes I leave it a week. It really depends.
I used to be really on it with Instagram, but now I'm a bit less so. I just can't be bothered as much. And I've really, even though that's the platform that I love, it's my dreamy platform where my people are and where I have the most fun,
have
the most engagement. And it does drive traffic to the site, weirdly.
Yeah.
With the lowest bounce rate.
Nice.
So the right people, my right followers are on Instagram. I don't think it's good to be too obsessed with it. I'm not going to build a business out of Instagram.
Yeah.
Really, realistically. I can understand, like, people who have built their business that way, it's awesome. And, yeah, you have to be really mindful of the algorithm changes, but I don't.
Yeah. But also, I think we're going through a bit of a, like, I don't know, bit of a teething problem with Instagram at the moment, where we went through this on Facebook, what, 5 years ago, where the algorithm came in, everyone freaked out, everyone was seeing, like, a major drop in traffic, everyone was like, I'm leaving Facebook, this is the worst thing ever, and
no,
it's
one,
like,
did.
Everything's just settled down, and yeah, you have to, like, put a bit more money behind Facebook, or you just have to change the way you do things and be a bit smarter with the way that you're posting content. But Instagram's going to be the same, like, things are settled down, everyone will get used to it. Yeah, you might still prefer the old way, but that's not how things are anymore, so we're just going to find better ways of doing it. And, you know, I think in the end, Facebook content is better than what it was 5, 6 years ago when they had to make that change.
Yeah.
So it's best for the user. And that's what Facebook actually is doing it for. It's for the end user who doesn't have a blog, who doesn't have, you know, just people who are on Facebook because they want to connect with their friends.
That's actually the thing that I think we all are all guilty of forgetting, that not everyone in the world is a blogger.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are a lot of brands.
And also I think we're getting really entitled with social media because we just expect that it's there for our benefit as a publisher, whereas actually you pay a very, very small amount to advertise to a very large audience, whereas you would never be able to do that in, like, bloggers can't afford to advertise on billboards or in magazines. Yeah. And so Facebook actually gives us a really good opportunity to advertise at a very low rate. And we get all, like, high and mighty about it. Like, how dare they charge me? And it's like, yeah, you were actually reaching people that you wouldn't have reached without them, so.
I feel like my whole opinion towards Facebook has changed, actually, after chatting with you.
Oh, yay.
I think it did the first time we talked about it as well, but I still didn't do anything about it then. What are your top tips to anyone starting a Facebook page now for their blog?
Post consistently. Mm-hmm. So don't leave it for, like, a month without posting anything. Get your custom audiences set up, put the Facebook pixel in, get your audiences started, even if you're not advertising to them yet, at least they'll be...
Is that simple to do then?
It is really simple to do. It looks complicated, it's not. Mm-hmm. If you Google how to install Facebook pixel...
Oh!
I'm boring her, she's yawning. Yeah, if you just Google it, there's like a really clear instruction site that comes up. And then, yeah, just keep at it and don't be obsessed with the numbers. The traffic will come.
Yeah. So where can everyone find you online?
So I am on Twitter and Instagram as L_Croft. My blog is lcroft.com. Mm-hmm. What else am I missing? I'm L Croft on Facebook and Pinterest. And pre-order my book, The Guilty Wife, on amazon.co.uk.
I'll link to it all in the show notes. Oh, actually, I have one last question.
Yeah.
So when you go to your website, it's obviously L_Croft or lcroft.com.
Yeah.
But your blog is a Bird in the Hand travel blog.
It is called A Bird in the Hand Travel. I am thinking about just changing it to lcroft.com because A Bird in the Hand Travel means nothing.
Oh, no, but I like it.
Thanks. I mean, it's a pretty name, but it just doesn't mean anything. And I think it's kind of, I don't know, I think I'm just going to change it to my name because then it will kind of encompass my book and things like that as well. So I need to do a whole site redesign.
Yeah. Is that a big faff? Because I'm thinking might change.
Well, I've been thinking about this for about 6 months and I'm just like too lazy to actually find a website designer. If there are any website designers listening that want to... Get in touch. Get in touch. I need you.
Me too. Maybe you can do a 2-for-1. That'd be great.
Yeah. It needs a refresh. It's been like years since I've changed anything. So
yeah, mine
time
too.
For change, I think.
Thanks for listening to What She Said. And if you like this episode or any of the other episodes, please think about giving me a lovely rating on iTunes. I really appreciate it. If you want to connect with me, head over to my blog, wanderloose.com, or hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Pinterest, where I'm @wanderlooseblog.